So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
It's Pride Month, and as we've been discussing, Pride Month has come back with a vengeance, and many people have questions. Questions to do with how to address Pride with their kids, with the television shows, especially Nickelodeon, Disney, and others, really forcing the LGBTQ agenda around and toward children. We'll be discussing that with Associate Marriage and Family Therapist Michael Gasparo, who is a specialist in addressing the gender crisis that we're facing today. Maybe you have a child or a loved one who's struggling with their gender identity. Maybe they've come out to you. We'll discuss that and also addressing it from a spiritual perspective as well. Sometimes we oversimplify it in one way or the other, from therapy or from a religious perspective, and we need all hands on deck. We are body and soul. If you have a question, numbers 1-888-914-9149. We'll also be talking about fertility in your 30s. What should we say here? In fact, this is really fascinating because we've had a lot of questions coming in. We'll address them. If you have a question about fertility, give us a call. The number's 1-888-914-9149. But I'm always fascinated because today many people are told by the time they're about 26, 28, you need to think about having your eggs frozen. In fact, I'll never forget the Kardashian mom, Kris Jenner, ended up telling one of her daughters last year after she went through a breakup, already had one kid, I can't remember which one of them, that she needed to look at having her eggs frozen and ponder her future. And I remember the daughter, I think it was Chloe, was so offended by this. Are you kidding me right now, mom? Like, I just went through this breakup. I have a kid. Like, is this really what you think I need to be thinking about right now? And it's fascinating how we try to play God with creating new life. That doesn't mean that intervention can't be a great thing as long as it respects life. But here's the deal. I was listening earlier to a podcast, and this was Michaela Peterson interviewing a top expert on infertility and reproductive technologies, an endocrinologist, and he's in favor of in vitro fertilization, surrogacy, all of these various things. Now, Michaela Peterson starts to ask him a question about what about those people who are 30 and up? Listen to this.
When's the ideal time to start looking into your fertility, in your opinion? What's the ideal age?
If you've hit 30 and you haven't thought about it, you need to address it. If you're not ready to have a kid and you're 30 and whether you're single or whether you have a partner, you need to start thinking about freezing, whether it's an egg or an embryo, for your future. My rule is 30. I've seen other doctors talk about 35. I have people that come in at 35 and their fertility is already down the drain.
How do you check how fertile somebody is?
There's a few different tests. A simple one that we do is a blood test, and it's called the AMH blood test. AMH is a hormone that comes from the eggs. The higher the level of AMH on a blood test, the more eggs you have. Doing an ultrasound and looking at the ovary to see how many tiny little bubbles there are, those are called antral follicles. That actually gives you a higher visibility of the well-being of your ovary.
That's Dr. Shaheen Gadir. Again, he's an expert in fertility and reproductive health, an endocrinologist. And it's sad to me because here's something that's missing from this puzzle. Anytime we start to talk about challenges conceiving or women wanting to have children when they've not been open to having children yet, or maybe they're not married, they don't have someone they want to have a child with, we talk right away about freezing eggs and creating new human life and freezing babies, embryos, those are babies in the earliest stages of development. Yet what's always void in this conversation is incredible NAPRO technologies, especially for those who are struggling to conceive children. We always post links on social media, and we will today during the show, and we'll also post it in the show notes. But here's the reality. What's wrong with telling a woman who's 30 years old, 28 years old, or 40, that she should stop worrying about fertility and do something about it by freezing her eggs? Well, here's the reality. The superovulation that occurs in the process of freezing a woman's eggs is very harmful for a woman's body. It can do anything such as lead her to go into early menopause, therefore preventing her from ever having children naturally. It can also create extreme tension and pressure on the body. It can create blood clotting and so many issues for a woman in this hyperovulation and stimulation of the ovaries that occurs in the extraction of eggs. You see, the body's meant to function a particular way, usually only releasing one egg per month. And so the fact that we're advising women in their 30s, in their prime and in their health, to go through a procedure that is extremely impactful and detrimental for the body, that's something we should really reconsider and talk about as people of faith. Because number one, it goes against the natural creation of human life, and the church is absolutely against this, not just playing God, but this damaging effect that it has, not just on the woman's body, but on her heart and soul, where we're putting pressure on women to find any means possible to have a child. But many women, I think, are looking out who want to have children. They've not found a spouse. They've not met anyone. And they find themselves hearing that topic of, hey, your biological clock is ticking. And so I think it's important to have this approach of compassion, but also honesty about the negative impact that egg harvesting has on a woman, whether it's for her future children or as a means to get some money, pay off student loans, go on that vacation. Because the reality is that fertility clinics are looking and asking and offering women a lot of money in order to harvest and donate their eggs. But it's not good for women's bodies. And so it also addresses the problem of in vitro fertilization, because let's say you freeze the eggs, or let's say you create new human life and freeze an embryo, a baby in the early stages of life. This is playing with human life in a fragile state. Often it leads to the destruction of many human lives in the process, and the destruction of lives because of our lack of respect of new babies implanted in the womb. Also, usually selective abortion is part of that process as well. You see, the health side isn't good, nor is the moral side. It doesn't make an already challenging situation any better from a health or a moral perspective. It doesn't leave the person at peace. And we hear many stories of people who have gone through with in vitro fertilization who have long-term lasting impact of the procedures of the egg harvesting or IVF or the surrogacy that took place that they themselves went through. You see, we're creating a bigger problem for women. We're not helping women with good and sound health care. We're leading them down a path of despair often. And this is the problem. We're lying to women by saying, you can just freeze your eggs. This is one of the biggest travesties about this egg harvesting and egg freezing mindset. Yes, you can freeze your eggs. But that doesn't necessarily mean that new life will result from them. Often, in vitro fertilization doesn't turn out that great. It has a very high failure rate, and it's very expensive and requires multiple rounds. And so my frustrating element to this is that we're actually lying to women, trying to make it sound as if they're promised children. And so I want to encourage you to know that there are resources. There is hope. We have resources such as incredible NAPRO technology. Again, we'll post a link in the podcast notes today. NAPRO doctors specialize in fertility, but respecting women's fertility. And I'm not saying that every woman will be able to have a child in her late 30s, in her 40s. But what I am saying is that they know how to study, be aware, and properly treat underlying health conditions and help in the great science of how the body was naturally created to create new human life. And so I want to ask you to join me in praying for those who are struggling. Maybe you're in your single years and you're worried about having children. Maybe you're struggling to conceive a baby. You got married later if you had a challenging time. Please pray for all those who are in the midst of this struggle, because it's real. And so many people, especially if you're single, can put pressure on young women and say, well, your biological clock is ticking. That doesn't help any woman to feel better. If anything, we should, of course, remind men of the responsibility to not drag their feet when it comes to proposing. And if they're serious, marry the woman. Don't take for granted her fertility and that she'll stick with you forever. And women, hold a hard and fast line with men if they're not willing to respect this. And know that there are great resources such as Enapro Technology when the challenges do arise. I ask you to join me on Instagram. Heidi asked for prayers for conceiving. Also, Gloria reached out, and we'll take her and other questions. If you have a question about fertility or Pride Month, an LGBTQ question, we'll take those throughout the show. You can go ahead and leave me a message on Instagram. We left a comment box on my story. Find me at Timmery, T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. Or you can give us a call now. The number's 1-888-914-9149. Again, we'll be taking your questions surrounding fertility and gender ideology. Joining me now is Associate Marriage and Family Therapist Michael Gasparo. He is an expert in addressing the issue of the gender identity crisis that we face today. And we're going to be discussing this from two perspectives. One, whether the LGBTQ community is really redefined healthcare according to transgender healthcare. And I think this is an important question to ask as we see pioneering interactions for the first time in terms of how we approach healthcare with a separate group of people as never seen before. And we'll also discuss how gender ideology is impacting children and people of faith. Welcome to Trending, Michael.
Thanks for having me. Always hitting the touchy topics together.
Well, thank you for everything you're doing. You work with reintegrative therapy, which is an incredible resource for anyone who wants to have something in their back pocket as the topic arises with friends, family members who are struggling, or maybe for you yourself. Can you share with us your initial reaction to this UCLA kind of announcement almost segregating people in terms of healthcare and trying to claim a certain type of healthcare is being denied or not denied to people who identify as LGBTQ?
The funny part too, Timmery, is that you and I began talking about this because I've been to UCLA Health Center, and so I'm on their email list. So my initial exposure to this wasn't through some conservative news outlet. It was just getting an email from my healthcare provider at that time, who was telling me that I was to celebrate Pride Month as part of the hospital system. And it just baffles me. I don't understand how this has anything to do with the UCLA hospital network. But yeah, it's focusing on two things. One, the treatment and care of people who identify as LGBTQ community, which, of course, in their dignity as human persons, they deserve equal care under the law. This is something that most Catholics would stand strongly in support of. What's confusing is what is constituted as healthcare and where does the Hippocratic Oath? Am I saying that wrong, Timmery?
Yes, the Hippocratic where Oath, would that, to do no harm, thank you. Right?
Yeah, to do no harm, right? And so where in that, as a mental health clinician, for instance, we are called also to do no harm. And so we want to make sure that we're reflecting as therapists and doctors should be reflecting, where is this intervention I'm claiming as healthcare, like you're saying, actually doing harm? And we know a lot of those things include things such as intervention in a medical level with cross-sex hormones, puberty blockers, surgeries to perfectly healthy, physically capable and fertile young people that could possibly permanently damage their fertility. And you go on these topics in a variety of ways on your show. But one thing that was especially interesting to me, Timmery, was part of the celebration of this Pride Month connection was a drag queen entertainment fundraiser on behalf of the hospital. Now, this part is just where it gets sort of like Twilight Zone strange. I have known people who chose to do drag performance. Okay. I am not a blushing flower who's never met anybody that didn't go to the Catholic Church. I love people who are different than myself. However, drag performance is like a niche burlesque adult themed entertainment genre. Why is a hospital hosting this as a fundraiser? It's just bizarre to me, and it doesn't. I don't say that out of hate, but what's your take, Timmery?
Yeah, this is so fascinating. I mean, being in Southern California, we saw at USD, a Catholic university, University of San Diego, that they had some of the first drag queen shows on campus, and it was so frustrating being in San Diego. Many people would go and object to this and ask, why are we continuing to allow this to happen? That's at a Catholic university. Now take this to a healthcare facility that's now as a fundraiser hosting a drag fundraiser. What's so confusing about this is, what does a drag queen show fundraiser have anything to do with healthcare? Now, maybe 20 years ago, someone might laugh at a drag queen show where a legit, like, man who's not confused about his gender goes on as a joke and dresses up as a woman, and it could be hilarious. But that's not what we're dealing with in most cases today. It's very sexualized and vulgar, and these are actually people who are confused about their identity, Michael. And so, you know, the confusing part about this whole thing is that the medical profession is adopting this radical ideology that is actually detrimental for people's health. To have a drag fundraiser actually perpetuates this idea of bodily mutilation with so-called sex changes and cross-sex hormones that we know have long-term impact and that we're giving to teenagers and prepubescent children as well as adults, that has long-term impact. And even the short-term impact that we do know of is horrendous, but there's so much we don't know because this is relatively new that we're doing.
Yeah, and with the drag queen performances, again, this is not to like hate on people who struggle with that or people who do that and like it. We know we obviously have some moral concerns as Catholics, but even as a secular institution, let's take even the Catholic perspective at it. Let's say they're a secular sort of private, or it's a state-associated hospital system. Like you're saying, I mean, you're kind of in the process. Did you lose me? Can you hear me, Timory?
We can hear you great.
Okay. So you're in the process then of sort of celebrating or normalizing the confusion around gender that fuels the very ideology that leads to the harm in the medical interventions you're talking about. So there's something about it that just seems a bit insidious to me. And if people really want to go see a drag show, you know, there are plenty of places they can do that. There are bars they can go to. I feel like a classy fundraiser. I mean, I'm not encouraging it. My point is, a fundraiser for a hospital system, it seems a cut below the dignity of that kind of important work to raise money for healthcare. It should be something that's dignified, that is high in its quality and in its moral components are, you know, pure and good for the benefit of the families attending, et cetera. So right. That's part of my concern too, is it's like mainstreaming something that's, if an adult chooses to do, perhaps it's their own choice, but it's making it into the mainstream that pushes it onto people who could be influenced in a way that's not healthy for them.
And I think what's important here is they're using language to make us feel guilty as if we should think this is okay. They're talking about, quote, equitable healthcare and amplifying intersectional voices. You know, this language is all a language of trying to say, well, if you don't jump on this bandwagon, you're not for equality, you're not for people, you're unhumane in your behavior. And they go on to try and say at UCLA that the pandemic has created major issues for trans and non-binary people who are so-called being denied medical care. You know, they're not being denied medical care. And I think that's important. Across the board, healthcare was at times on a pause during COVID, and people who needed life-saving care were not receiving it. And that was a travesty in and of itself. But a sex change or cross-sex hormones are not life-saving procedures. In fact, they're harmful procedures. And I think it's important that we continue to emphasize that. But what it comes down to as well, Michael, is they're trying to claim that LGBTQ people are being denied healthcare. I have not heard of a legitimate instance where an LGBTQ identifying person has legitimately been denied any type of life-saving care, from going to the hospital for a cold to going to the hospital for surgery to take care of their body and their wholesomeness. What we have heard of is it's been a few instances where Catholic hospitals have stood their ground and said, no, we won't perform a sex change, you can go somewhere else. And this brings me to this idea, Michael, that for some reason, and I love your perspective from a therapist perspective, you know, for some reason we've justified, well, it makes me feel hurt that this hospital won't care for me. I'm sorry, if I go to a doctor and let's say he's sexist and he treats me badly as a woman, or maybe let's say he doesn't like kids and he's not being nice to me because I have a kid with me, I'm probably just not going to go back to him, or I'm going to suck it up when I go there and just get what needs to be done. We need to stop putting our emotion and our feeling at the heart of every so-called instance where we feel slightly uncomfortable.
And what's interesting about the denying of healthcare is they're saying they're not being honest about what's happening either in the types of procedures or in the reality of some of those things still being done. I have a friend who's a nurse who runs a surgery ward in a big university hospital in Utah, and they were still performing sex change or sex reassignment surgeries during the pandemic. So first of all, they're harmful procedures and they're not medical care, they're mutilation care. And, you know, a delusion is, by definition, is a fixed false belief. And it for decades has been known that transgender delusions should not be treated through surgical intervention. But that's a whole other ball of wax. We know that those are unhelpful and they're harmful to people's physical well-being, but they're still even doing them. So they're pushing a false narrative, one, that it's healthcare, which we know it isn't, and two, that it's not happening still somehow, when plenty of places were still doing it. So it's all serving their agenda of making them seem more like victims so that they can push a narrative that furthers their ideology.
And this is why we're talking about this. Don't buy the false narrative. People who identify as LGBTQ are not being denied true health care. And we need to be honest and be able to discuss this. If you have a question, number's 1-888-914-9149. Michael Gasparo is an expert in dealing with the gender ideology issue we face today. And we'll be back to discuss this more about children. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Michael Gasparo, he's an associate marriage and family therapist. You can check out him and his work at reintegrativetherapy.com. If you know anyone who's struggling with same-sex attraction, gender dysphoria, maybe that's you. You're challenged. You want to live according to your faith, but you want answers. Well, check out reintegrativetherapy.com. It's an incredible resource. Michael, we're taking questions. If you have a question now from Michael, the number is 1-888-914-9149. Michael, I want to touch real briefly on this topic. A 16-year-old wrote into me this weekend, Katie, and she was listening to the show I did last week titled Responding to Pride Month. We'll post in the link. And I broke down why the problem with Pride Month is it has really become all about children and this sense of indoctrination and playing a science and political experiment on their backs. But she went on to discuss how she feels like she can never get away from this uncomfortable gender ideology that follows her everywhere, from her peers to her social groups to any extracurricular activities to the school itself. And she said it's so frustrating. She wants to be able to respond with her religion, but she finds herself just becoming angry and upset. And she said, like, how can I just almost center myself in the midst of all of this bombardment that's going on about the LGBTQ agenda?
Well, the first thing I would actually do is honor her anger, because anger is a normal and healthy emotion in response to injustice or unfairness. So I think it's okay to be angry. I mean, Jesus got angry, and when he saw bad things, his anger helped give him the energy he needed to push back and to fight for good and to fight on behalf of the good. But yes, acting in anger is different than feeling angry and then making a good choice to try to combat an evil. So maybe the first thing in terms of centering is just acknowledging that it's okay that you're angry. You know, I'm angry, and it's because this is a really bad thing that the people are pushing on me, and I don't want to push on me. Maybe she's thinking to herself, I value myself as a woman, or maybe she's thinking this is confusing. You know, Timory, I do not envy the confusion that is pushed on young people. If I was a young person, if I was in my teenager years now, don't you think it would be hard to sort through all of this?
Oh my gosh, I can't even imagine. Katie, I was reading your message, and my heart went out, because it's hard being an adult dealing with this, you know, the peer pressure. But imagine being in school with your friends, everyone either giving into this agenda or being frustrated by it. You understand why people are angry. Now, we're not encouraging to act out in anger, but, you know, I think some of the tactics for coping and recovering from this, as hard as it is, and I've got to be really frank, and I think parents, if you're listening right now, know that your kids are struggling. They're either giving into this or they're frustrated and they're fed up. And I think that, you know, walking through my own journey through high school was challenging. It was a lonely journey at times, and it required stepping out and kind of understanding. I remember my mom looked at me one time and she said, "Timory, to be holy means to be set apart. And sometimes you have to be that portion that's set apart." And that's that moment where you're reminded, like, I need to take the time to be patient, to have the right relationships. And those take time to build that will bring peace and joy, and not a radical agenda that is truly upsetting and disheartening for my soul every single day. You know, sometimes we have to separate ourselves from those types of environments, whether it's certain activities, locations, or maybe even types of schools that we're at.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, for some people, I don't know this young lady, but she might not be at the right school. She might not have an opportunity to go to a different school. But if she does, that's an option to consider. You know, this environment isn't right for me, she might say to herself, or maybe trying another way. Like, I know homeschooling is a conversation that a lot of people have right now, but that might not be possible for her. So part of that is also the Paschal mystery. Not that we can't also do things to affect change in our circumstances, but uniting that suffering to Christ and knowing that he's with you in that while you work through this difficult season. And that doesn't mean not to have hope for change or to try to do something differently, but that you're not alone during this challenging time.
And just a note on schools as well, perhaps charter, perhaps private school or homeschooling are not options. I know that the charter schools have been less impacted by the LGBTQ agenda. It is starting to impact them, but charter schools are also another option that can often remove you from this drama. And there are charter schools out there that have more classical and faith-based individuals who are running them that might be an option that is still more affordable as a parent. I know a lot of parents are choosing this option, but Katie, you know, you are there. You are a warrior in our culture today. And that's what's so hard, is that a burden has been placed on you to be honest, to be joyful, and to be loving. And so remember, always to be loving and charitable. If someone's being combative on the topic, it's probably not necessarily the time to dig in, because they may not listen. But with great love and with charity, and always praying to the Holy Spirit in those moments, Lord, come Holy Spirit, help me to understand whether I should stand up and speak up or sit down and just be quiet in this moment. And that's hard, but at times right now, it is necessary to be prudent with when we stand up and speak up, for the sake of recognizing when we will and will not be effective, but don't cower at the same time. What are your thoughts, Michael?
Especially when it's the right time, knowing that it's good to speak truth with love, as we've talked a lot about together, Timory. Even then, some people might not respond well. But when somebody, as you mentioned, is really heated, in the psychology field, we tend to call that the word flooded. Maybe their pulse is rushing. And when your adrenaline's going like that, everyone, even myself, if I'm flooded with emotion like that, my cognitive reasoning skills actually go down. Your blood oxygen level drops in your brain, usually below 95% is when it starts to make it hard to think logically. And so you're right. You know, if you know someone's really flooded and red in the face and yelling at you, that's not a time to try to have a respectful dialogue. So maybe the best thing to do at that moment might be just to listen, or to walk away even. But when you are with a person who you've built a trusting relationship with, it's never going to feel easy to be courageous enough to speak the truth. So I'm not saying it's going to be easy, but those will be the times when the Holy Spirit can guide you in that moment to think, this is the time to be courageous now, where the most fruit can come of that. It doesn't mean they'll receive it well always, but it's still, you have to look internally and ask for that guidance to know when the right time is, and then go for it. Because courage means being sometimes afraid and doing it anyway.
Great. I have another question that came in on Instagram. And if you have a question, number is 1-888-914-9149. You're listening to Relevant Radio. This is Trending with Timory. Joining us today is Associate Marriage and Family Therapist Michael Gasparo, who's an expert in responding to this gender ideology. A question came in about how to handle how transgender kids in Catholic schools are actually happening. What do we do to address this?
Gosh, this is the million-dollar question right now. And I will say I have a little bit of an inside track to some of the Catholic schools in the Archdiocese of Los Angeles, because I've been involved with the counseling program that is in many of the schools in the Archdiocese. And I will tell you that a lot of kids that are going to counseling will not necessarily get a counselor at the Catholic school who is going to fully align with the church's teachings on gender and sexuality. So, you know, even if your kids are at a Catholic school, if they are going to be going to counseling, I would recommend you have a talk with your own children about what your thoughts are on these issues. There is an aspect of gender dysphoria that is showing up in clusters. They're calling them social contagions in some ways. And yes, this is not the right-wing propaganda. This is just data. The left and the right are talking about it. We don't understand it fully yet. But especially young women, it seems, can be influenced by groups experiencing rapid onset gender dysphoria. So this is a real concern. This is not fear-mongering, but having conversations, controlling the narrative, as it were, to where you get to get ahead of it with your kids, I think is one of the best things parents can do, because you're not guaranteed, Catholic school or public school, that the people who are in supervisory positions are going to be on the same page as the church's teachings on this. And if you're noticing it in your school, like there's a wave of this happening, because I've heard of this happening in Catholic schools that I've worked with even, it's just a real issue, but don't be afraid, you know, pray, bring it to the school board, maybe talk with the principal, have some resources, bring in a speaker. Don't be afraid to address it head on, because believe me, if you, the kids are dealing with it, they're talking about it then. So better to be the adults in the situation to bring it to the forefront and really address it confidently and with patience and love. And remember, the kids are often being misled by internet ideology. So yes, you have to combat it with a strong and not a watered down Christian anthropology.
Mm-hmm. And this is why we have Michael Gasparo on. He's an expert. He can help in handling this. Maybe he's a resource that you can bring into your parish, to your school, to help address this radical gender ideology that young kids are struggling with. And they're saying, wait, that's me. I'm struggling. I want answers. We'll have someone who's an expert come in. Michael talks about it. I discuss this. And so often when we are at events, when we're speaking to people, when he's in the counseling room, when I'm speaking to anyone from college age down, they're looking for resources. They're looking for help. They want help addressing this. And that's why reintegrativetherapy.com, where Michael works, is an excellent resource. Courage is an excellent resource as well. Courage Catholic Ministries will post links to these in the show notes for today's show. You can find that at relevantradio.com/trending, where you can subscribe. Now, I want to discuss, Michael, how this gender ideology big picture is truly impacting children. I shared last week the Blue's Clues song for the gay parade song that was absolutely horrifying. In fact, it was so catchy, I'm still singing it, because the song was so well written and it's so influential for kids. If I'm singing it, the kids are singing it. But Nickelodeon continues and has over the years to bring to the forefront this pride issue, forcing it on children. Here's just a little glimpse of where Nickelodeon, in one of their shows, breaks down the meaning of the pride flag. Listen to this.
It's pride, everybody!
Every color on the pride flag is a symbol in the sky.
Pride.
And I'm proud to be me every time that I see that pride flag waving high.
Red, light, orange, healing, yellow is sunlight. Green, nature, blue, harmony, purple is baby blue, pink, white represent transgender people, and black and brown represent the queer and trans people of color.
We're all in this together.
Associate Marriage and Family Therapist Michael Gasparo here. What's your response when you hear this? What's the impact of this content on young children?
Well, first, they wrote a bop, as the kids would say. That's a summer hit. It's catchy and it's glitzy and it's on purpose. Like you said, it'll stick in your head. I'm a musician and a singer too, so I understand what they're doing in terms of accessibility of a message you put into a song and it's going to stick in your brain. And so it's a little bit scary how effective they do it. I do think the impact on children is significant. I remember reading a book that is pushed at a charter school. I hate to speak against charter schools here because I know we talked about how they can be lighter on this, but a friend of mine was a therapist in a Los Angeles charter school, and they forced the second graders to read I Am Jazz, which is a book you've talked about in here. It's a book about a famous transgender young person, and I read it as a 29-year-old and was confused and feeling unsettled by it. And I, as a second grader, can imagine that it would be an unspeakable confusion because I wouldn't have the words to articulate why it was confusing. So this is the same thing for these kinds of songs. They're putting out ideas that don't resonate with the human spirit at the deepest level because they're not truth-based, and yet they are so well packaged that they can immediately be taken on as truth. And so what I would say is for kids, we need to really emphasize a different narrative. And this is why little things like for resources for parishes, Vacation Bible School, and simple things like that, where you're teaching kids songs that are rooted in gospel messages, is really great. Because it's not just telling them, like, don't watch Nickelodeon. You're providing a replacement behavior, or providing a replacement opportunity for stimulating their creativity and their mind. So that's my initial reaction. But I also would like to add one other thing, Timory. When we're talking about this pushback against this ideology, this is not a hateful thing against individuals who do this even. We should pray for those who persecute us or push in a belief we don't share, and treat them with utmost kindness, because by our love, they will know there's something different about our war, our pushback.
As associate marriage and family therapist Michael Gasparo, we're going to come back with Michael here, and we're going to discuss a Catholic approach and perspective, because some people are saying, well, it's just the devil and these kids are being tempted by the devil and that's all this is. That is what this is, but we have to be able to respond with human resources because God created us with bodies and souls. So let's take a multi-pronged approach to helping address this and not just write it off. We'll be right back here with Michael Gasparo on Trending with Timory.
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
The hot topic, we're addressing the gender crisis. We have many people calling in with questions because their kids are struggling with this. Before we take more questions, and if you have one, the number is 1-888-914-9149. Associate Marriage and Family Therapist Michael Gasparo is with me now, and I want to address, Michael, this multi-pronged approach of both our faith and the human resources we have that do enter into the spiritual realm, yet for some reason we reduce it to one or the other. Can you address this issue?
The mind is a complex thing, and human psychology is not separate from our soul. So we are body and soul, and they're we are one unified person. So when we're dealing with any kind of psychological issue, there's often a spiritual component happening in somebody's life that is worth addressing, and biological, social, and other factors, familial, environmental, that contribute to somebody's emotional difficulties. Transgenderism, what used to be called gender identity disorder, and what still is referred to as gender dysphoria, is a psychological condition primarily. There may be unique exceptions to where it is primarily a spiritual issue, and there may be unique exceptions where it's not at all a spiritual issue, but it's primarily identified as a psychological condition. And now the difference is that a portion of the medical and psychological health community have denied that it is a condition at all. But most Catholic therapists and doctors still see it as a mental health condition. It is not primarily viewed as a spiritual deficiency or even a form of, let's say, possession or something along those lines. And so what we want to do is, if children especially are having gender dysphoric issues, we want to look at the unique complex combination of nature and nurture, environment and genetics, that's contributing to some of these difficulties, and the possibility that messages which are evil, such as gender ideology, could be making people who are uniquely susceptible to those kinds of beliefs victim to these kinds of symptoms. But it's not necessarily just in a spiritual attack when a young person is having these kind of challenges.
Now, just to nuance this, Michael, as you're saying this, this gender ideology, it is satanic. It is not of God. And so when we say that, yes, it is a matter of spiritual warfare. But what we're saying is that we have to understand that treatment of this, we're talking often about real psychological wounds that are underlying issues addressing and impacting this. We're talking about family wounds. We're talking about social societal pressure of the over-sexualization of children. All of that is a realm of spiritual warfare. But the human response, the human gifts to help treat the mind is a part of addressing the problem overall. And I think that it's important, I think, that to understand that we're on the same page here when we discuss this.
Yeah. And like you said, there can be a lot of push from one side to say it's only a demonic message. And there can be push from the secular order to say there is no such thing as a spiritual realm or spiritual warfare. And so I think the church in its wisdom does not dismiss one or the other. I mean, this is why many times before churches or the diocese will perform an exorcism, they'll have a psychologist work with the diocese to evaluate for things like schizophrenia so that they can prudently distinguish between real spiritual attack and sometimes biological brokenness that is someone is susceptible to because of their experiences or their trauma, etc. So yes, spiritual warfare is real. Yes, these messages are evil. Pope Francis echoed Pope Benedict XVI saying gender ideology is an indicator that we're in the age of sin against God, the creator. It's a really evil idea that is being colonized throughout the world. But the people who are susceptible to those ideas often are also the victims of many other psychological issues that could be addressed first and foremost, or in conjunction with the other spiritual challenges that are impacting this symptom that they're experiencing.
That's marriage and family therapist Michael Gaspar from the Breakthrough Clinic. Check out thebreakthroughclinic.com. Also, reintegrativetherapy.com, a great resource for anyone struggling with same-sex attraction, gender identity disorder. If you have a question, the number is 1-888-914-9149. Anne is calling from California. Her daughter is going through a transgender issue. Anne, welcome to Trending. What's your question for Michael?
Well, thank you so much for having this this topic on your show, because I've been dealing with this for a few years now, and I've struggled to find any resources, through my faith to help me with this. My daughter has been claiming that she's supposed to be biologically a male, and for about 3 years. I've had her in therapy, and she's currently being treated for depression and anxiety. But I've done a lot of research on this, and I've also done a 54-day novena, rosary novena, and she is part of a divorced household, and I've adopted Saint Joseph as the spiritual foster father of my daughter's, as the result of this divorce, and it's been really hard, but I trust in God. I know this is not what His will is for her. I just know that this is not what He has in store for her.
That can be really tough to have to walk through that journey with your daughter when you know that there's something she's doing that's different than how your vision for her life that you believe you have and God has for her. What have you done with her to help her work on this so far?
Well, she was in denial that she was in depression, that she was suffering from depression to begin with. And you had pointed out, there is a social component to this, because there's a lot of kids that were in her social circle, and this is prior to the pandemic, that are all kind of claiming, some of these different identities. And, I finally said, look, let's at least explore the possibility of some depression. And I'm kind of taking a different tact. I'm not trying to throw my faith in her face, because I don't want her to be angry at God. I basically have said, let's explore, the possibility of you suffering from depression, because the reality is that a lot of these people who do actually transition, through hormones or through surgery, they the suicide rate is high among them, and the depression rates are high among them. And, you know,
well, and Anne, I'm going to jump in real quick to tell you, I think that's a really great strategy, because at the forefront, most people with gender dysphoria, that's not the first domino to fall in terms of their mental health and well-being. It's not usually someone who's incredibly well-adjusted and dealing with a really stable sense of self, and then out of nowhere, they have rapid, you know, completely changed view of their own gender and identity. And what you did is you identified a common enemy, her depression, right? You and her could both get on board with that and say, look, but you're struggling here. You have some depression. And that's a great inroad to get the conversation going. What I will say is I recommend if you're going to take a young person to a therapist with gender identity issues, even if they're struggling with depression as the way of, you know, kind of getting them interested in seeking counseling, try to take them to somebody who you as the parent can vet and make sure. They may not have to be a Catholic therapist. Maybe you're on insurance plan and you need to go to a specific person. But make sure that they're respectful of your views as a Catholic and that they're willing to be really upfront and honest about how they handle this issue in the therapy room, because that varies widely between different clinicians. So we don't necessarily find the therapist we want always, but you ideally want to fight for a therapist who at least respect your family's values and not push the ideology further on your daughter.
And just to back that up, Michael, people can find resources if they need to change a therapist or find a therapist. CatholicTherapist.com has great resources for therapists you can find closest to your area. And ReintegrativeTherapy.com, you guys are experts at addressing this issue. Michael, I am curious, because we have more calls coming, but I want to touch briefly on the influence and social media influence that is significantly impacting young girls. Abigail Shara's book came out this year talking about the transgender craze that's seducing our girls, and she emphasizes how social media and that peer influence, that over-sexualization of children has been such a negative impact for young girls, and how this has been ushering them into the trans identity through rejection of the body, of sexuality, and so forth. Can you speak a little bit to ways to maybe cut back on that social media peer influence and the pressure these girls face?
Well, I loved whenever J.K. Rowling came out with her essay that we've discussed, because you know when a progressive liberal is identifying a similar problem that you're not, you know, you're really on a serious path here of destruction and as a society, when people from opposite ends of the political and social perspectives identify a common issue. And with this issue in particular, limiting social influence may come through at a certain age, restricting devices. Of course, there's practical boundaries you can set with your children. At a certain point, you're not going to have as much control over the input and of information and where they're getting it, you know, especially if you have a teenager, 16, 17, coming into their late adolescent years. So I like to advocate, Timory, that age-appropriate restrictions on devices, graduating as they go, and gradually, not every kid is the same either. So you want to really be sensitive to which children need more guidance than others, because every child's unique and God loves them just that way. But the last thing I'll say about that in terms of influence, make sure that you are the one they feel comfortable talking to. Who would you rather them go to, Google search or you? You know, what's the better chance they have of finding some good information? So keeping those channels of communication open, which is why I like what Anne said, is she really found the common ground with her daughter that they could both at least maintain that communication line open. So when she's struggling, maybe her daughter will come to her, right? And so that's what I think is important. And I'll beat that drum all day long of maintain the lines of communication. Be patient as a parent. Your child may not be willing to really internalize your message, but plant a seed lovingly, and it may grow a very beautiful plant later in life when they're ready to hear it.
And we are praying for you and with you, for you and your daughter and all of those who are helping you in this journey. I ask you to please pray now, if you're with us listening, to Our Lady of Hope. Our Lady of Hope, pray for us. We ask you to intercede for all of us, especially for Anne and her family. And Anne, you're her parent. You're her mom. You love her more than anyone else. You know what's best for your daughter, and I know that you are going to continue to fight for her. Don't give up, and know you are not alone. You have an army of prayer warriors praying with you now and who will continue to pray for you We have another question coming in from Anita in California. Quick comment, actually, having to do with how she was raised. Anita, what's your comment?
Well, I was one of those little girls. I thought God made a mistake and I should have been a boy. I was a tomboy. My dad would be happily embarrassed when the boy's father would come saying, "Your daughter is beating up my son again." I had my faith. I had my mom telling me all the time that God does not make mistakes. And it was okay. I was allowed to be the tomboy. I was allowed to be who I was without any chastisement, but knowing I was a girl. But it was okay to be a girl and do boy things. And I still did girl things, but I helped my dad build the porch. I helped with the car. And I am very happily heterosexual, and I cannot imagine somebody trying to convince me as a child that, well, I was a mistake and I should have been a boy.
Amen. Anita, thank you for sharing that. Michael, you know, I think this is the truth. I want to hear your thoughts. So many people today say, well, that kid's just, you know, maybe they're really confused. Maybe they're actually meant to be the opposite sex. That's what we put on today. But 30, 40 years ago, that's something that was never said.
Right. And I think that seed of questioning of identity would have been nurtured in an unhealthy way in her childhood if it was today, 2021. So praise God that her parents gave her patience and let her be the type of girl she needed to be without having to undermine her beauty as a revealed child of God as a girl.
You're listening to Trending with Tim Ray. That's Associate Marriage and Family Therapist Michael Gasparo. Find him at reintegrativetherapy.com, an incredible resource. We'll post a link to that in the podcast notes for today. Subscribe, share this. It is a resource for you and for others in Pride Month.